On November 30th, 1992, Grady Stiles was found murdered in his Gibsonton, Florida home. The circus performer, known as Lobster Boy, had been shot in the back of the head while he was watching TV. Detectives found it odd that none of Grady's family members seemed shocked or even sad that he was dead. His public shows had wowed audiences for decades, but life at home with his family was violent and complicated. This is the mystery of the death of freak show performer Grady Stiles. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Gibsonton, Florida is a town of about 15,000 in Hillsborough County, Florida, about 20 miles south of Tampa. The town's popular with tourists who travel down US 41 across the Alafaya River to visit the International Independent Showmen's Association and Museum, tangible reminders of the carnival lifestyle of the present and the past and its rich history here. Gibsonton was once a much smaller community that was known as a great fishing spot and known for its unique residents. Like an 8'4" giant named Al Tomaney and his 2.5-foot-tall wife, Jeannie. They were billed as the world's strangest couple on what was then called the freak show circuit. Al and Jeannie had traveled together as performers until they tired of life on the road. That's when they decided to settle in Gibsonton, where they opened a trailer park and fishing camp called Giants Camp in 1949. Travel show performers followed Al and Jeannie's lead, and in time, Gibtown, as it would become known, became the off-season home for people who were viewed as different to the world outside their unique community. People who would otherwise have to deal with gawkers or would be made to feel less than or unacceptable in the world outside of Gibtown. Carnival and circus performers spent their off-season here, and in time, many would retire in Gibtown. Grace the Mule-Faced Woman, Colonel Casper Balsam, an actor who played the role of one of the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz, along with Emmett the Alligator Man, and so many more. The names may sound odd to us now, but during the 19th and 20th century, freak show performers, they were famous. Many were celebrities who earned thousands of dollars each week to perform on the freak show circuit. Many had been born with deformities that prevented them from working and earning a living in any other way. Freak shows are viewed as demeaning to us now, but during their heyday, a lot of people wanted in on these shows and the money they could bring in from performing or appearing in front of curious people. Gibtown was the off-season haven for these folks. And if you weren't the giant running the fish camp and also serving as the police chief, or the Siamese twins who ran the fruit stand, you were kind of the odd one out. Unique accommodations were made in Gibtown, with the local post office being designed with a low counter to accommodate little people. As years passed, the popularity of freak shows declined thanks to the growing acceptance of people with deformities or physical challenges. And the Americans with Disabilities Act would help open up new jobs and opportunities for people who previously chose the freak show circuit because it was their only way to find work. Gibsonton remains a retirement community for people who travel on the carnival circuit, and there's been a growing interest in the area since the fourth season of American Horror Story. The season, called Freak Shows, was inspired by the town and some of its former residents, including one of those former residents who did not leave town of his own accord. Grady Stiles was known as the Lobster Boy. His murder in Gibsonton in November of 1992 and the trials of those involved led to a lot of unwanted attention being paid to the town that liked to be off the radar. Grady Stiles was a member of the self-proclaimed lobster family. The Stiles family had displayed traits of a condition called ectrodactyly since 1805. Known as lobster claw syndrome, the congenital deformity leads to hands that look like claws, and in some cases also affects legs. The syndrome is inherited but can skip a generation, and its effects range from generation to generation, with some of those inheriting the condition being unable to walk. This was the case with Grady Stiles. He was born in June of 1937 with no middle fingers and his remaining fingers fused together. Grady's case was severe, affecting his legs as well. He relied on a wheelchair for mobility, but was able to maneuver on his own thanks to what people described as Grady's shocking upper body strength. Grady's condition was inherited from his father, Grady Sr., who was a sideshow performer, embracing the condition as a way to earn money as part of those traveling freak shows and carnivals. When Grady was 7 years old, his dad, Grady Sr., made him part of the show, and the lobster family would become popular across the country. Young Grady loved his life on the carnival and circus circuit, embraced life on the road, and the fact that people wanted to buy tickets to see his family perform. To Grady, his family was normal. Dealing with lobster claw syndrome had been part of life for previous generations, so it was nothing out of the ordinary for him. He did what everyone in his family had done. He learned how to do things in his own way, in his own time, like learning to write his name, even learning how to shoot a gun, thanks to fellow performers who spent time with him on the road to help him learn skills he was interested in. Thanks to his family's show, he met a young carnival worker while he was on the road. Mary Teresa was not a performer. She was a runaway who escaped an abusive father by working and traveling with a carnival, doing odd jobs. Along the way, she found herself drawn to Grady Stiles. The two fell in love and married in 1958. But soon after they exchanged vows, Mary learned there was a dark side that emerged when Grady drank. Grady's drink of choice? Whiskey. And a lot of it. Despite Grady's use of a wheelchair, his upper body strength was not affected by his condition. When he drank, he would become belligerent and violent, using his upper body strength to maneuver himself to the floor and then attack his wife. Witnesses said Grady would use his claw-like hands as weapons, attacking and hitting his wife and choking her. Over the years, Grady and Mary would have two children, daughters named Kathy and Donna. Kathy inherited ectrodactyly from her father. Donna did not. Grady did as his father had done. He included his children in his lobster family show, traveling the country with a circus, and returning home to Gibbtown in the off-season. Grady's daughters were also victims of his violence. He would attack them, and as neighbors made clear, it seemed he treated Donna in a much harsher way, often attacking her because she was not like him and her sister. By 1973, Mary found the courage she needed to leave Grady Stiles and file for divorce. Not knowing how divorce proceedings were carried out, Mary Stiles did not appear in court the day the divorce was finalized, which left Grady Stiles with full custody of their children and allowed him to continue to include his children in his traveling show. Mary remained in Gibbtown and married another sideshow performer, a little person named Harry Glenn Newman. Newman was known as the world's smallest man. Eventually, their marriage would come to an end, but not before Mary and Harry had a son, Harry Glenn Newman III. Harry would follow in his father's footsteps as a sideshow performer. He was known as the human blockhead because he pounded nails into his nostrils. Well, Grady Stiles also married again, and he and his second wife would have a son, Grady Stiles III, who inherited ectrodactyly. Grady would divorce his second wife, but But over time, Grady III would become part of his father's lobster family show. Grady's violent and controlling ways at home also played into how he treated his children as a part of the show. He forced Kathy and Grady to wear gloves when they were in public because if anyone wanted to see their claws, as their dad put it, they were going to buy a ticket to the show and not get a free peek. In 1978, Grady Stiles retired from the show circuit, but retiring did not slow down Grady's need for control of his family. It seemed to only escalate the violence. Grady and Mary's 17-year-old daughter, Donna, told the family she was pregnant. She and her boyfriend, Jack Lane, planned to marry. When Donna told her father of the plan, he said he wanted to meet the man who would be his son-in-law. The young man agreed to meet Grady, and when he arrived at the home, Donna went inside after her father told her he wanted to have a private talk with Jack. Once Donna was inside the home, she heard a bang and then another bang. Grady Stiles had shot and killed the man she loved. Donna would later testify that after the shooting, her father smiled at her and said, "Better him than me." Grady Stiles was arrested for the murder of Jack Lane and did not deny a thing. In fact, at trial, Grady took the stand and confessed to the murder. It seems his attorney had advised him of something that would work in his favor. Due to Grady's medical condition, being found guilty would not mean prison time, could not mean prison time. Grady had cirrhosis from his alcoholism, and due to his physical condition and accommodations that were needed for a prison to house him, being confined to prison would have been considered cruel and unusual punishment. So Grady Stiles confessed, did not show regret, any hint of remorse. He was convicted of third-degree murder and served no prison time. His sentence, 15 years probation. As Grady's family described it, it was as if Grady felt empowered, emboldened, as if he thought he was invincible. He had murdered a young man in cold blood and was free. Back at home, his drinking ceased for a couple of weeks, and it was during this time Mary took Grady back, reunited with a man who had caused so much pain and heartache in the family. She would later say she never stopped loving Grady and hoped that he would change his life after he had faced trial and stopped drinking. Grady asked her to come home, told her he wanted her back. Mary said she agreed to go back to him because she felt she was reuniting with a better man. She wanted to be there to support his change, but that change was very short-lived. Grady started drinking again, and once again, the alcohol and the darkness inside him led to violence. He would beat Mary, reminding her, "I killed before and got away with it. I can do it again." And that violence led to a brutal attack on his daughter and almost killed one of his grandchildren. One night, as Grady and Mary were fighting, Grady tried to attack Mary. His daughter, Kathy, who had the same condition as her dad and was confined to a wheelchair, rolled her wheelchair in between her mother and father in an attempt to protect her mother. Grady became enraged, turned to his daughter, who was 7 months pregnant, and began to viciously beat her. The beating was so violent, Kathy went into early labor. Thankfully, the baby survived. Weeks later, in November of 1992, Mary reached what she would call the final straw with Grady. She was in bed when Grady came into the room, drunk as usual, and held a knife across her throat, saying that soon he was going to kill her. He held the knife against her throat for moments and then turned and left the room. And that's when Mary Stiles vowed that Grady Stiles' violence had to come to an end. In the early morning hours of November 30th, 1992, authorities were called to the Gibsonton home of Grady and Mary Stiles. According to Stuart McIver's Murder in the Tropics, Detective Michael Ouellette reported that when he entered the Stiles mobile home, he immediately smelled whiskey and cigarettes. He then saw the murder victim in a large armchair wearing only a pair of briefs. The victim's face was covered in blood, with the probable cause of death being listed as gunfire. The coroner would later determine the victim, 55-year-old Grady Stiles, died as the result of 3 gunshot wounds to the head. Detectives interviewed Grady's children, Kathy and Grady III, and also spoke with Mary Stiles and her son Glenn on the scene that day. Detective Ouellette would later make an important note about those interviews at the scene of the crime. None of the victim's family members seemed shocked or sad that Grady Stiles was dead, had been murdered. Authorities had listed Grady Stiles' time of death at about 11 p.m. on November 29th. A neighbor had seen a young man leave the Stiles home just after he heard what sounded like gunshots. According to Mary and her son Glenn, they had left the house for just a little bit to visit with family down the road and returned to find Grady dead, which seemed a little too convenient to Detective Ouellette. Ouellette and his team followed their gut on this and once again interviewed Mary's son, Glenn. They viewed him as a potential weak link because Glenn had an IQ of about 79. Glenn agreed to a lie detector test and failed. Police questioned him again, pressured him, and a frazzled Glenn started talking and revealed the plan to murder Grady Stiles. Once Mary Stiles vowed that Grady's violence had to end, she shared this opinion with her son Glenn, handed him $1,500. Glenn used the money to hire 17-year-old Chris Wyant to kill Grady Stiles. The night of November 29th, Wyant tapped on the window of the mobile home. Mary and Glenn left, and Wyant entered the home and shot Grady Stiles in the back of the head as Grady watched TV in his armchair. ...54-year-old Mary Stiles, 20-year-old Harry Newman, and 17-year-old Christopher Wyant were arrested. Wyant would face trial first. He had pulled the trigger and killed Grady Stiles, all for $1,500. Wyant was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 27 years in prison. Mary Stiles would face trial next. Her defense attorney would argue that because of the cumulative years of abuse, Mary believed she was in imminent fear of harm or death at the hands of Grady Stiles. She had no alternative but to participate in an unthinkable act, a murder-for-hire plot. Her attorney had planned to call experts to testify that Mary was a battered spouse who had to act in self-defense to protect herself and her children. But the judge ruled that testimony could not happen because Mary Stiles and her children weren't in imminent danger at the time of Grady's murder, which left her entire defense in the hands of Mary and her children, who testified about the abuse they suffered. Grady and Mary's daughter, Kathy, testified that Grady was like Satan himself, very cruel, very cold-hearted, and very sadistic. He constantly threatened to kill Mary and his children. Grady's son, Grady Stiles III, was 17 years old when he testified on behalf of the defense, sharing that days before his father's murder, he had to break through the locked door of the home to rescue his stepmother from his father, who was once again drunk and beating Mary. Grady was on top of Mary that day, choking her. Mary Stiles also took the stand. When she was questioned, pressed as to why she didn't leave Grady Stiles, as she had done before, take the kids this time and flee his abuse, Mary Stiles made it clear that Grady warned her if she left him again, he would find her and kill her. And she challenged the prosecutor on leaving with her children, who were well known at the time as part of the circus show with her father. Mary asked, "Where would I go? I can't hide the family because they stand out." Mary continued, saying, "My husband was going to kill my family. I believe that from the bottom of my heart. I'm sorry this happened, but my family is safe now." In the end, the jury found Mary Stiles guilty of manslaughter. She was sentenced to 12 years in prison. The final trial in the murder for hire plot was that of Mary Stiles' son, Harry Glenn Newman, who had contacted Wyatt and hired him to kill Grady. The jury found him guilty of first-degree murder and murder conspiracy, which meant life in prison. Harry Newman died in prison in 2014. Christopher Wyatt was released from prison in 2009, and Mary Stiles was released in 2000 and moved back to Gibsonton. In 2014, Stiles' son, Grady Stiles III, appeared in an episode of a reality show called Freak Shows on AMC. He said that from his perspective, the story of his father's murder hasn't been told in the right context. He claims his stepmother, Mary, did not pay someone to murder his father. As Grady tells it, his father and Mary were fighting, and Mary yelled something along the lines of, "Something has to be done about him." Mary's son, Glenn, heard her, told their neighbor, Chris Wyatt, about what his mom had said that day. And the next day, Wyatt shot and killed Grady Stiles. Whether true or not, the jury, in three separate trials, found Mary and her co-conspirators guilty. In the days and weeks following the murder of Grady Stiles, the folks who called Gibbtown, Florida home did not express outright support for Mary. It was no secret that Grady Stiles had been a violent man, which seemed to be overlooked by some people in the carnival and showman world who held Grady in high esteem because of his success as a showman. Some of the residents spoke with the LA Times after the murder and shared that all Mary Stiles had to do was leave Grady again. They were not supportive of Mary and her decision, saying they didn't understand why she had to go and murder Grady Stiles. But when it came time for Grady's funeral and his burial, it was clear that people did not feel that a beloved member of their community was gone. In a reflection of the contradiction of his public life as a star of a popular circus show and his private family life that overflowed with violence, when it came time to bury Grady Stiles, no one wanted to serve as pallbearers for the funeral. Usually, it's an honor to be asked, meaningful even, but a clear message was sent about the lobster boy, Grady Stiles. There was no honor and respect in carrying a man who had abused his family to his final resting place. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. A final note about Grady Stiles' funeral. Grady was buried with one bouquet of flowers that was on his coffin. The flowers featured a banner that read, "From your loving wife." If you'd like to learn more about Gibsonton, or Gibbtown as it was known in its heyday, and see photos of its early residents and Grady Stiles along with his family, check the show notes for the episode at southernmysteries.com. I'd love for you to connect with me and fellow Southern Mysteries fans in the discussion group for the podcast. Just search Southern Mysteries in Facebook groups to join. And if you'd like to support the show and ensure Southern Mysteries continues, you could do that by leaving a tip or buying Southern Mysteries merchandise in the store at southernmysteries.com. Another easy and free way to support the show is to share this episode with your friends when they ask for podcast recommendations. If you're like me, most of the podcasts I listen to were recommended to me by friends. So it would mean a lot if you shared Southern Mysteries to help spread the word that it's a show you think folks should check out. Thanks for that. And thanks for listening.